The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. International Overdose Awareness Day is observed annually on August 31st. The first observance was organized in 2001 by S.J. Finn, a harm reduction worker who managed a needle and syringe service program in St. Kilda, Victoria, Australia. Since 2012, International Overdose Awareness Day has been an initiative of the Australian nonprofit public health organization, Pennington Institute. The Pennington Institute also puts together some tremendously informative webinars. They held one recently on the newly emerging threat of nitazenes, a class of synthetic opioid that's been showing up recently in the US, UK, and EU. Let's hear from one of the speakers. Tony Duffin is the CEO of Analiphy Drug Project, an organization that reaches people who are often taking multiple drugs, sleeping rough, and experiencing mental and physical health difficulties in Ireland.
So Analiphy is a low threshold harm reduction organization. That's our ethos. We don't bar people from our services. We find ways of working with people, engaging with them and supporting them. We provide services in Dublin City, Balbriggan, in North County Dublin, and in the Midwest region. The types of services that we deliver, this is not an exhaustive list, but just to give you a sense of it. The LAIR team, that's our law engagement and assisted recovery team. We take referrals from the Irish Police, the Gardaí, when we provide intensive case management services to people entrenched in street life. And that's important because it gives you a sense of the work we do with the police in Dublin and the relationships that we have with the police here, the Gardaí. ACT, that is the Private Emergency Accommodation Case Management Team. And I'll talk again about that in a little while because that was important in terms of this particular example. And again, it's a case management piece. And then community support, outreach, mobile overdose prevention, ASP, low threshold stabilization groups, community detox, assessments for key working and case management, prison groups, etc. So harm reduction work on the street level. And then low threshold nursing. We have a nursing team who provide low threshold nursing supports, very, very inclusive nursing practices. In terms of nitazenes, these are just two examples on the screen of warnings that the state put out, the HSE put out. And the first one on the left is from November 2023, when we had this particular cluster of overdoses. The one on the right is from June of this year, and the difference between the two there, the first one was a huge learning curve for everybody. It was a powder substance believed to be heroin, and on the right it was street tablets, benzodiazepine tablets, which was again, a huge worry, finding that nitazenes had made their way into another element of the drugs market. So in November of 2023 in Dublin, there was the first one. December 2023, we saw another 20 overdoses, non-fatal overdoses in Cork. And in June 2024, we had this particular incident with tablets in Dublin, Galway, and the Midwest. It was serious. When this happens, and you'll see why in a minute, we average in Dublin maybe one or two, maybe three overdoses across the city in a day. But you're going to see what happened to us in November of 2023. I'll take you through that now. So this was the official warning from the HSE. That was put out. The National Social Inclusion Office issued a risk communication to people who use heroin in Dublin region following a number of overdoses. That went out about midday, somewhere between midday and 2 o'clock. That was really, really helpful to drug services workers because that meant that there was something backing us up in terms of what we were seeing on the ground. Before that midday, I was walking my dog. At about 8:15 a.m., I got a call from Austin O'Carroll, a doctor based in Dublin, who was working in a clinic, and he was dealing with an overdose. And the ambulance crew had said they had dealt with seven that morning already. He put down the phone to me because he was dealing with something. And around 15 minutes later, I called him back. And he couldn't speak because he was dealing with his second one. So there was nine already by about 8:30 in the morning, and it just kept going up. So you can see that was a very serious situation. As the day unfolded, and as I say, this particular communication was sent out from the HSE, it became apparent that we had a very serious situation going on, and we needed to work together to respond and to save as many people's life as possible. And I'll tell you what we did. So by Friday, the HSE had updated the status of its warning on Friday, the 10th of November, when it was confirmed through analysis conducted by Forensic Science Ireland that a trace amount of nitazine type substance was identified in a brown powder associated with Dublin overdose. And you can see that they went on to later on to identify what type of nitazine it was. They put out another risk warning to the across Dublin to the services. Well, I suppose our outreach teams were on the streets in Dublin, continuing to pass the word of the overdoses onto to peers, people who use drugs. Hugely important in terms of getting the information out. They did a brilliant job of then informing their own social networks. So in terms of stakeholders, critically important in terms of getting information out. But realising that this was more than just a 24-hour problem, we asked volunteers from our team at Aliffey to work over the weekend. We don't normally work over the weekend, but hands shot up. People realised the importance of this, and we put out four staff over Saturday and Sunday to help keep the messaging going and to put up fly posts and all sorts of things to do any way to communicate the risk and further interventions. So as I say, heading into that weekend, we knew that we had a problem. As the weekend progressed, the HSE were able to provide us with additional data from hospitals, which we again passed on to peers to complete the communication circle. Those peers gave us whatever information they had about the overdoses they knew of. If someone said, a lad called Chris had OD'd last night in such and such a street, we'd go up around that area, find out whatever we could, and feed that information back to the HSC. It wasn't necessarily scientific data, but it was crucial in building up a clear, constantly evolving picture of what was going on. So we were intelligence gathering. You know, we were gathering information from the ground up, and we were sharing it at a national level. We also worked closely throughout the nitazine overdose cluster with the Gardaí, the Irish police, who, among other things, helped with our taking of samples. If somebody had overdosed on the street or in a hostel, and it was possible to access a sample from that person, the partner or a worker, the Gardaí would then get it as quickly as possible to the HSC for analysis. It was an example of just how closely and effectively the HSC, Angarnish Corner, other stakeholders work together. The Department of Health, for example, were very supportive, you know, at a macro level, and we kept them informed. And over the weekend, the total number of overdoses for that period rose to 57. You can see that in the initial 24 hours, there were 34 overdoses. It made national news. You can see from the picture on the left, warnings were put on Friday, Thursdays, I think it was Friday evening actually, where people driving home and commuting home were warned on road signs of an extreme overdose risk as people went home from work, which was totally unheard of. And, you know, the city council supported these kind of measures. I should have mentioned naloxone was a huge benefit throughout this weekend, getting it into people's hands, training them quickly, and making sure people knew how to use naloxone, and obviously call ambulances and what to do in an emergency was the messaging really for people. So But after that weekend, there was a lot of planning and work across multiple agencies that went into how we might respond. We knew that this wasn't going to be a one-off. And when you think about it, in the build-up to this weekend, we had foresight. We knew that the crop in Afghanistan had been destroyed, the opium crop had been destroyed, opium poppy crop had been destroyed by the Taliban. We knew that 90% of the crop was gone, that something was going to happen, and it was an obvious guess that nitazenes would play a role in this, or synthetic opioids would play a role in it. We didn't realize what it might be. We were worried about fentanyls, but it actually was nitazenes, which are, as Rita said in the beginning, are actually more harmful, more toxic. So huge issue. But just to give you an example of what we did in the days afterwards. So over the next 5 days, private emergency accommodation as a response to homelessness in Dublin. And we work in those services, providing case management, as I mentioned. And over 5 days from Tuesday the 14th of November onwards, Analifi provided 327 private emergency accommodation staff with overdose and naloxone training, and further ensured that naloxone was readily available in the 54 private emergency accommodation locations across Dublin, which houses 3,500 people who were within homeless singles and couples. So we know that in the weeks and months that followed, that naloxone was being used, and ambulances obviously were being called, and that people were much more aware professionals were much more aware of overdose risks and how to manage them, and they felt much more confident in managing the overdoses that would continue. I mean, this was a cluster. Nitazenes didn't go away, and as I said, we have had experiences since last week in Port Leash prison in the Midlands of Ireland. There were 12 people taken from the prison having overdosed. We thought it was nitazenes, but it was a synthetic benzodiazepine that had never been seen before. So synthetic drugs are going to be a huge, we expect them to be a huge difficulty for us going forwards as they change and such. I think we really need to use the foresight we have and implement as much as we can in advance of future problems. So my take-home messages would be: prevention is the enemy of the good. We're not that far removed from the COVID experience. I like this quote from Dr. Mike Ryan: be fast, have no regrets. If you need to be right before you move, you will never win. Perfection is the enemy of the good. Speed trumps perfection. Everyone is afraid of the consequence of error, but the greatest error is not to move. And in that moment in December, November of last year, that came to mind. We had to move quickly, and we had to do what we thought would work. I suppose that's what we did collectively in Dublin, the stakeholders, the peers, ourselves, NGOs, Liffey and others, the Gardaí, the City Council, the HSE. We all worked together. And we save people's lives, there's no doubt about that. I think just to say to you, value equally the informal and formal data collection and communication structures as things unfold. And naloxone, it does work and it does save people's lives.
That was Tony Duffin, CEO of the Analifi Drug Project. He was a speaker on an expert panel discussion on nitazenes, which was held recently by the Pennington Institute. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Now let's hear from Chris Rintoul, Innovation and Harm Reduction Lead at Cranston, a harm reduction and social justice charity providing support services across England.
So there are obviously a range of nitazenes, most of which I can't even pronounce, never mind spell. The two that we're seeing are isotonitazine and metronidazine as well. So, and the reason we know that, or the information we have so far to tell us that, is that nearly all of the detections by WEDINOS, which is the Welsh Emerging Drugs Information Network, Which is based in Wales, but actually is accessed by all four UK countries, including England as well. Most of the detections have been those two metazines up top on the slide. And of these two, it's metanidazine, which is the one which is far more common in these results that we have. So these are the two that we have seen most of, and we have focused most of our attention in terms of what to do about them. So deaths involving neonazines in England and Wales, there was a spike in overdoses and sadly also overdose deaths in around the Midlands area in England. For those of you who aren't familiar with England, the West Midlands is the main city in there is Birmingham, and actually it was the epicenter of the deaths involving neonazines last year, in the particularly around the early summertime. So what do we know in terms of the second half of 2023? These were the deaths in various different parts of England, and you see that the West Midlands, that there were 17. As well as this, there's other information that we have. So by December 2023, there were 25 deaths in Scotland. And the National Crime Agency for the UK has recently published that there are 230 deaths linked to neonazines from the 1st of June 2023 to the 1st of June 2024 across the UK. However, bad and all as these figures are, the situation may actually be a little bit worse. It's possible that not all deaths involving neonazines are actually tested for, because there's no reason or no suspicion that neonazines may have been involved in the death, and therefore it could be an underestimation in terms of the numbers of deaths. And there have been some concerns that some have raised that if somebody has died a number of hours previously to the testing commencing, that it may not be able to detect neonazines as being involved in that death. So what do they look like? Here's some pictures which show neonazines in various forms. And I guess that the main point that I want to make here is they look very much like lots of other drugs that come in pill or powder form. And as a result, they can be added to or even replace a wide range of various different drugs without consumers ever knowing. In summer 2023, Cranston and other organisations, we began to receive reports from people using services of a very strong heroin, that's what it was kind of known as at that time, that was rapidly causing overdose and had an unusual smell, taste or texture around differently in foil if it was being chased, or when it was being cooked up, it behaved differently when it was being cooked up for injection. So quite a few people mentioned a red colour and a sweet taste. And that in itself was a bit hard to kind of work out what that actually meant, because we didn't know what the smell or taste or behaviour of neonazines would be if they were within drugs. So we thought that neonazines had been added to this particular batch of drugs, which had this sort of smell and taste to it. And then we kind of, you know, reversed back and started to think, well, what might cause that? And we thought, actually, that that's probably mannitol. So mannitol is a drug which is frequently enough added to heroin in the UK and some other drugs as well. And mannitol, interestingly, it's a sweetener, but it's also a medication. And when you see mannitol in normal heroin, it's at such a low level, really, that it's not detectable. People won't notice the smell or the taste or that red colour. But if, for example, you have padded out some heroin with a little bit of neonazine, but you want to bulk that out, then you might add quite a bit more mannitol, by which time it becomes observable or noticeable. So what we kind of started to think was that we need to check, is there are differences in the drugs, and not necessarily assume that the difference was about a neonazine being added, that you detect something about the properties of neonazine. It was more that you could detect the properties of the filler or the bulking agent, in which case, in this case, it was mannitol. So we started to ask people to watch out for drugs which had a strong effect and behave differently in a whole range of different ways, anything at all. And we started to get back more and more quality information, which started to help us give better advice and offer better solutions to people who were at risk of overdosing with these drugs. So on another point of the visual appearances of netazines, Tony mentioned that a little earlier there. Where I'm from actually is I'm Northern Ireland, slightly up the road from the Republic where Tony's speaking from. And here we found that there was a lot of benzodiazepines that were being contaminated with netazines. And a lot of the people that were using those would not have had any opioid tolerance at all. And the other problem for here is that people tend to take them in handfuls rather than one or two or three. So you could potentially have somebody taking 50 blue tablets that they thought was Xanax or Alprazolam or even diazepam, never would be, but also contained netazines as well. Now, what the concerns are here is although overdoses involving benzodiazepines or illicit benzodiazepines which are being contaminated will occur more slowly because they haven't been injected or smoked. The potency of the netazine that was contained within them and the quantity of tablets that the person had taken was leading to overdose. And oftentimes it was with people with no opioid tolerance. And the reason for benzodiazepines being such a concern for people in my part of the UK is because of the historic use of benzodiazepines from the 60s onwards to manage the anxiety of, well, whole communities who were in conflict for decades. And so the overprescribing the benzos in Northern Ireland versus the rest of the UK was quite extreme, actually. And in recent years, that prescribing has been curtailed, and unfortunately, nobody has found a way of trying to make a safer supply of benzodiazepines within the UK, particularly, I would say, in Northern Ireland and Scotland, where they're much more prevalent and cause much more harm. So also on the slide then, netazines have been found in a range of drugs throughout the UK, similar to what Tony was describing there, not only in heroin, but also in the fake oxycodone tablets, which was quite a feature for a while last year. In THC vapes, very occasionally, and a range of other illicit benzos. So Ednos testing has now shown a shift from their addition to heroin to their addition to illicit benzos. And the concern here is the illicit benzos are used by a different, are often used by a different population. Heroin users may well use illicit benzos as well, but often you're having people that are using illicit benzos who have no experience with heroin. And if that is the case, they may be unaware of the risk of overdose with netazines having contaminated their benzos that they've bought. So making people aware of their risk of overdose was crucial. So as treatment services, we kind of asked ourselves, well, what can we do better? And there's a number of things, none of which are rocket science. I think we all probably know what they are already. We need to provide upstream drug checking, i.e. testing the drug before it's used rather than after it's used, or remnants would be really, really helpful to do. And if we had legal mechanisms by which we could easily do that, we would do that instantly, I would say. Widespread naloxone distribution. To reach saturation point of naloxone in the communities and the areas and the places that people who overdose may be. But one little point on naloxone I'd like to make is that we don't want to get to a point where naloxone is kind of weaponized, or that it's deemed by people who might be given naloxone or have naloxone administered to them as it being done punitively. So I'll talk a little bit more about that in the next few slides there, but I think we need just to be aware of the perception of people who use drugs who may be heroin dependent and are therefore possibly going to be given naloxone at some point in time if they overdose. Their perception of the effect of that and the perception of the reason for that happening and the dose that might be used may be seen in a way that could suggest to the person that they don't want to be anywhere near any service that is known to administer naloxone, because they're just going to put you in there at one, you've been miserable for ages. And that may be to do with dose or dose titration over a period of minutes after an overdose is discovered. Next point then would be about getting opioid users into treatment at levels of opioid substitution. which provide therapeutic benefit. One of the key phrases that kind of shaped my thinking, especially since I've come to work in England or for an English organization, is somebody had said, I don't want your poxy 40 mils of meth. Speaking of methadone. And I think that really helped me to see how treatment could be perceived by people who use drugs. And it's quite telling in terms of the doses of methadone that may be used, which may be far too low to provide therapeutic benefit to people. And also that protective or more protective plateau of opioid tolerance. Overdose prevention facilities would also be a great addition. It's great that Dublin's getting one. It's absolutely fantastic. Glasgow's getting one, but don't forget the rest of the UK, and in fact, the rest of the world. There are many places, including places that our services operate in England, that would very much benefit from some form of OPC. And lastly, for those who don't get any benefit from traditional OST, buprenorphine, methadone, and dimorphine-assisted treatment would be very helpful. Okay, so back to naloxone then. I think I noticed a question in the Q&A section before when Tony was speaking there. And I have to say, in my opinion, we don't need a super strength naloxone. We don't need a 4 or 8 milligram nasal spray, etc. What we need is one dose every 2 to 3 minutes and go with effect then. It's a problem, I guess, and that we don't want to be putting people into such a rattle, giving them such a high dose of naloxone. Yes, they've survived, but the perception that they'll be left with will be that it's been used punitively or it's been very unpleasant, etc. So therefore, the person self-selects out of services where they think that might happen to them some other time. So one dose every 2 to 3 minutes should keep the person alive, restore normal breathing, and may even restore the person to full consciousness, if that's the aim. But against that, overdoses in the UK involving nitazenes have tended to reoccur, what we found anyway. So the person starts to, or given naloxone, breathes normally for a period of time, and then starts to re-overdose again, requiring more naloxone. Again, at that kind of more gradual kind of approach to redosing. So whilst I don't think we need super strength naloxone, we may need more naloxone overall to treat the person, but over a longer period of time, because they may well re-overdose. And overdoses involving metronidazine tend to have a higher chance of causing cardiac arrest than the other ones, and therefore CPR is needed alongside naloxone. Not enough time to go into it here now, but it'd be my opinion that within England there hasn't been enough focus on CPR and other supportive care alongside the administration of naloxone when it comes to the training, and that could be improved in line with how it's done in Northern Ireland and Scotland and Wales, where there are national programs and there are standards that are kind of set for training, which include quite a bit of focus on CPR for those unfortunate and rare cases where it's also required.
That was Chris Rintoul, Innovation and Harm Reduction Lead at Cranston. He was a speaker on an expert panel discussion on nitazenes, which was held recently by the Pennington Institute. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Find this edition of Century, along with an archive of past shows, at the Drug Truth Network website, drugtruth.net. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long.
For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.